We seek refuge in Allah from the accursed Satan. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Exalted, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salam, hello, and welcome to our audience all over the world to another edition of our program, Islamic Studies. This program is being broadcast to you live by Sahar Universal Network from the Islamic Republic of Iran, from the holy city of Qum, and I'm your expert host, Ijaz Hussain. The topic today, of course, comes as no surprise, but it is about Muharram. It is about Ashura, about Imam Hussain, peace be upon him, the third holy successor to the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his holy family, whose life was lost in the plain of Karbala for the sake of truth. And we want to discuss this topic in depth because, of course, there's a lot that is misunderstood about it, but at the same time, it was a very significant and historic event in terms of changing the whole direction of Islam and giving us a deeper understanding of what it means to sacrifice oneself for the sake of Islam. So we're going to discuss that after a short break, so please stay with us. We'll be right back. Thanks. Welcome back, viewers. Thanks very much for staying with us. I'd like to introduce my guest in the studio about this topic, and I'm pleased once again to have the honor and the pleasure of introducing Dr. Fakhr Rohani, who is a leading academic, a scholar, a researcher, and a writer on Ashura. And I'm very pleased to say that your book has now been published on about Imam Hussain alayhi salam, and it's called Medina to Karbala in the words of Imam al-Hussein. Yes. And that's wonderful. That is really great because that's a unique piece of work in terms of the compilation of the whole event of Karbala. So it seems to be that you're the right person to speak about in terms of Ashura. So just to begin the topic, speak a little bit about Imam Hussein alayhi salam in terms of his early childhood, the significance of his birth, and you know the fact that you know the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, said in a very famous hadith that Hussein is of me and I am of Hussein. So if you could tell us a little bit about Imam Hussein himself as a personality, as a character, very significant in Islam.
Yes. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bin ista'in. Sallallahu alayka wa abdullah. Assalamu alayka wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. The topic of this session is about a personality who has made a very significant and radical change in the world.
Yes.
This personality is Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, and he can be rightly regarded as the reviver of the religion of Islam next to the Prophet Muhammad, because the Prophet Muhammad has introduced the religion of Islam. And Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam restored the religion of Islam and kept it from going astray in the time of the Umayyad caliphs. In order to introduce Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, first and foremost, it must be mentioned that he was born on 3rd Sha'ban, according to the most prevailing accounts. He was born on 3rd Sha'ban, in the fourth year of the Hijrah,
right.
The Prophet Muhammad's migration or exodus from Mecca to Medina.
Sure.
From the point of lineage, his father is Imam Ali alayhi salam, and his mother is Fatima al-Zahra, the Prophet Muhammad's daughter.
Sure.
It must be indicated that throughout his childhood he received the tender treatment of the Prophet Muhammad, and the Prophet Muhammad showed very much interest in him as well as in his elder brother Al-Hasan Al-Mujtaba alayhi salam. It must be indicated that the news or anticipation of his martyrdom wasn't anything late, I mean, to be spread after his martyrdom, rather just a few moments after his graceful birth. The prophet, the archangel Gabriel, descended from the heavens together with 1,000 angels in order to celebrate this very happy event and
sure.
to congratulate the Prophet Muhammad on this graceful birth.
Sure.
And at the moment, the archangel Gabriel informed the Prophet Muhammad that his beloved grandson, that is Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, will be martyred at a place called Karbala. And the Prophet Muhammad shed tears over this affliction.
That's right. I mean,
yes.
this is very significant about his birth, although there was a glad tidings about
yes.
his birth. And of course, he has special attributes in terms of healing, in terms of salvation, even for the angels as well.
Yes.
But as you quite rightly say, it was at this time that even the Archangel Gabriel revealed to him the goal of the life of Imam Hussein alayhi salam in terms of saving Islam in the future.
Yes.
Yes.
And during the lifetime of the Prophet Muhammad, he was together with the Prophet Muhammad, and the Prophet Muhammad was very much cautious about him. And according to some accounts, when Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was yet a child and he was playing, in the streets of Medina, there was another boy who was playing, together with Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. The Prophet Muhammad showed interest in one of the boys who was, playing together with Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam on the basis of this boy's deep respect for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. All in all, it must be explained that after Imam Ali alayhi salam left Medina for Kufa in order to assume his imamate over there and
yes.
to establish his government over there,
sure.
Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam also accompanied Imam Ali. So the people of Kufa, who later on betrayed him, were not altogether ignorant of the character and personality of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam.
Sure, sure.
Because Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, for sure, during the reign of Imam Ali alayhi salam, was a resident of al-Kufa together with his father, Imam Ali.
Of course.
In this regard, it must be indicated that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam's political behavior was to support the right path. Be in the time of the Prophet Muhammad, in the time of Imam Ali, or in the or during the imamate of his elder brother Al-Hasan Al-Mujtaba alayhi salam. It must be indicated that although Muawiyah was no doubt the usurper of the right of the Ahl al-Bayt and confiscated the political power out of malicious treatment with
well,
Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam.
This again, is a very significant
yes.
Fact that you mentioned, because of course Bani Umayyah had, from the line of Abu Sufyan, who was
yes.
the enemy of the Holy Prophet throughout the Holy Prophet's mission in terms of spreading Islam. He was an arch enemy, and his son, of
yes.
course, Muawiyah, even that we have to say in inverted commas, whether he was
yes.
or not is something
yes.
else. But he had, as you quite rightly say, usurped the caliphate,
yes.
And his power base was in Damascus, it
yes.
was in Syria.
Yes.
So he was a governor.
Yes.
And of course, Imam Ali alayhi salam dismissed him because he was, in terms of the qualifications for a governor in terms of the Islamic Ummah, he didn't fit that description. He was incompetent, he was corrupt, and he had to be removed. And this is where, this conflict starts, that he refused to move. So this is where we are talking about this fitna that started developing amongst the Ummah. So lead us on now in terms of, the Khilafat of Imam Ali, what happens after that, because we are talking about a very major war that took place in between. But then where does Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein then play the role in terms of what Imam Hassan alayhi salam did in his imamate, and that then led to the events of Ashura?
Yes. I was talking about this, and after Imam Ali alayhi salam, we find that Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam got to power, and Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba didn't need anybody to nominate him as Imam, because
right.
he was, he was appointed by God, by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
That's right.
And the line of Imamate, started from Imam Ali alayhi salam. From Imam Ali alayhi salam, the line of Imamate reached Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba, and next to Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba, Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam became the third infallible Imam. As you know, in the lifetime of Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam, it was Muawiyah's conspiracy to boycott Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam.
Yes.
The moment Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba was leaving in order to take part in an imposed battle against Muawiyah, there were around 40,000 soldiers together with Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam. However, owing to the lack of enough recognition and knowledge regarding what was the right path and what was the wrong path, Muawiyah succeeded in fooling a large number, a great majority, of those who were accompanying Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam, and even one of the persons who was a close, who pretended to be a close companion of Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam, injured Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam on his limb in order to
In his leg, yes, in his thigh, yes, that's right. He was stabbed in the thigh, yes.
Yes, and the person intended to injure Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam in order to take him to the enemy's army, to submit him to the enemy's army.
Oh.
That person never succeeded, to carry out his mission or his plot.
Mm.
However, Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam had nothing but to sign a treatment, an agreement together with Imam al-Hasan.
Yes,
treaty.
Yes. Mm.
And it must be indicated here that although Muawiyah is always regarded as a very intelligent person, I think Muawiyah made a very, very big and at the same time significant mistake in his political life.
Mm.
Muawiyah sent a letter attached to a blank sheet of paper to Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam and said, whatever conditions you stipulate, I agree with all of them as a treaty. One of the items Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam indicated in the treaty was that, and please be informed that, when Muawiyah was sending the blank sheet, just ahead of receiving the answer from Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam, Muawiyah had already signed the blank sheet. So whatever indicated on it was legally accepted, because his signature was already present over
sure,
there.
Sure.
Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba indicated in it, as one of the articles in the peace treaty, that Muawiyah had no right to nominate anybody as his successor.
That's right.
And Muawiyah had to pay at least 50,000 dirhams to Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, not Imam al-Hasan.
Right.
Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, out of the taxes he was going to receive from the Darabjad or Darabgerd region in southern Iran.
Right.
Well, Muawiyah had already signed and sealed the treatment.
Yes.
So the treaty.
Mm-hmm.
So
was there not also an aspect in that treaty that mentioned about the successorship, where it should actually go?
Yes.
In terms of, because Imam Hasan alayhi salam was indicating that after Muawiyah, the successorship should go to
the line of the Hashemites.
As the Hashemites, to the
yes.
Ahlul Bayt. So,
yes.
As you quite rightly say, it was if he was going to nominate anybody after him,
yes.
of course it was going to be illegal as far as the conditions of the treaty were
yes.
concerned.
And more importantly, of course, after receiving the letter, Muawiyah went to the mosque and declared that he wouldn't abide by any of the items indicated in that peace treaty. It was an affront, and it was, of course, an illegal act done on the side of Muawiyah. However, in order to respect the signature of his elder brother, that is Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam, so long as Muawiyah was alive, Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam embarked on no political movement against Muawiyah. Not in order, I mean, this shouldn't be interpreted as Imam al-Husayn's being in agreement with Muawiyah. No, Imam al-Husayn was very much cautious and very considerate regarding the valuable signature of his elder brother, who was the imam of his time.
Well, this is a very important point, that you know that the imamate was in the hand of Imam Hassan alayhi salam, so whatever his decision was, Imam Hussein followed as a follower. I mean, there was no leadership. The imamate came afterwards, not before. So that's a very significant point, because it was leading to the question, you know, that we were talking in the second question. That was the socio-political context of the Muslim world in the imam's time. That is, of course, of the time of Imam Hussein. But before we get to that, that's a wonderful build-up.
Yes.
To, you know, the background, because of course we have to mention to the viewers that Muawiyah was in power for almost 20 years.
Yes.
I mean, that's not a small period of time by any means in political power, you know.
Yes.
So in terms of what were the conditions in, what had Muawiyah done to the Muslim world in terms of the fact that, you know, which is one of the reasons that leads up to Ashura, but what had he done in terms of the Muslim world, in the fact that the Ummah had become completely deviated from the Sharia, deviated from the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his Holy Family's teachings? So could you enlighten us a little bit about, you know, what had happened, you know, in terms of whatever corruption he had spread, or the brutality that he had spread throughout the Muslim Ummah?
Yes. During the political lifetime of Muawiyah, we see that he murdered quite a large number of followers of Imam Ali.
Yes.
And it's indicated in some history book. And for your information, I read this piece of news which I'm going to relate here.
Yes.
In a manuscript, and the book is still, I mean, in manuscript, I read in it that during the Umayyad, I mean, governorship and ruling, if, for example, a person wanted to make another person entangled in some sort of difficulties, regarding the political power, this person could simply report that it seems that such a person has some tender feelings regarding the Ahl al-Bayt, and that would be enough for the next person to get entangled in many types of problems.
Sure.
At the same time, it must be indicated that in the lifetime of Muawiyah introduced himself as the right person in order to direct the whole Muslims of the world.
Sure.
At the same time, we find that the frontiers of the vast Islamic empire had already reached many far places. I mean, in Africa, in Europe, in Eastern Europe, in Asia, in Central Asia, and so on.
I mean, this is the thing about Bani Umayyah, that, you know, they were apart from the fact that, you know, Islam was about to converting hearts and minds, but Bani Umayyah was still pretty much in the aspect of Jahiliyyah. I mean, they were trying to spread Islam through force, you know, by attacking territories of Rome. Persia had already been taken over during the Khilafate of Umar. But at the same time, as far as this was concerned, the Bani Umayyah was concerned, they were doing everything by force. It was a much more brutal campaign in terms of, just consolidating their own power. It wasn't about Islam, it was about consolidating their own power.
Yes, and more importantly, in the lifetime of Muawiyah, he managed to fabricate a large number of hadiths and ascribe them to the Prophet Muhammad.
Yes.
While ascribing quite a large number of fabricated hadiths or fabricated sentences to the Prophet Muhammad. He never let anybody to relate or to quote any hadith in praise of the Ahlul Bayt, and especially
yes.
in praise of Imam Ali.
Of course.
How can a person claim to be a successor to the Prophet Muhammad and at the same time his behavior, his treatment is nothing but animosity to the son-in-law of the Prophet Muhammad? How can it be judged?
Sure.
How can
I mean,
it be
this
evaluated?
Was another practice of Bani Umayyah as well in terms of Muawiyah's rulership, that he bribed many of the chieftains of
yes.
the important tribes, both in Sham, in Damascus, as well as in Kufa. So, I mean, there was a lot that was going on in terms of the fact that the loyalty was being bought.
Yes.
It was nothing to do with conversion of Islam or the teachings of the Sharia or anything like that. I mean, as we say, it was just simply to consolidate his own power, which was the reason why Imam Ali alayhi salam wanted to dismiss him in the first place,
yes.
because he saw him as a great danger to the teachings and the message of Islam. So this is why he wanted him removed. But this corrupt individual in 20 years had really altered the complete the way of thinking even of the Muslims at that time. So when we come to the point where Muawiyah has passed away, and what happens at that point? How does Yazid come to power? What happens
yes.
there?
I want to move back to about 2 years before the death of
Please,
Muawiyah.
Yes, that's interesting.
In one
yes.
of the Hajj ceremonies, mm-hmm. Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam collected a large number of chieftains and leading ulama mm-hmm. of the world of Islam of
sure.
the day
sure.
in Mina, and they delivered a very informative lecture and sermon for them. And Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam informed them of the tyranny of the Umayyads and the Umayyad dynasty
right.
and the heresy they opened up and they introduced in the world into the world of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it needs another session to talk about that sermon of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam.
Sure.
However, mm. when Imam Muawiyah died on 15th Rajab in the year 16th Hijrah, and Yazid got to power, it must be indicated that Yazid was busy with enjoying himself when his father died.
Mm-hmm.
And well, right from the beginning, we understand that what type of person Yazid must be.
Sure.
His father died, but he was enjoying himself. He was, together with some other people, playing and jumping and, doing some other sorts of things.
Right.
And at the same time, when Yazid got to power, he wrote a letter to Al-Walid bin Utbah, the governor of Medina
yes.
that as soon as the letter reaches him, he had to summon Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam to the governor house, Bayt al-Dar al-Hukumah, and to obtain Imam al-Husayn's oath of allegiance in favor of Yazid by force.
Right.
Next to this, just immediately, Yazid issued another short letter. In it, he indicated that if Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam refused to pay allegiance with Yazid, the governor of Medina the government of Medina had to behead Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam at the moment, right away. Okay, without
yes, this
any hesitation.
This was an order that was
yes.
given in
yes,
Medina.
Without
yes.
hesitation.
Yes,
without,
yeah, without
hesitation.
Hesitation, yes.
So we find that the treatment of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam was a peaceful treatment, and the initial treatment of Yazid was quite brutal. Okay, he understood no language but the language of force. He was such type of person.
Yes, yes.
Well, when the courier reached the Medina, went to Al-Walid bin Utbah and showed the letter of Yazid to this person. He summoned Abdullah ibn Zubayr and Al-Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. Abdullah ibn Zubayr was talking with Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam in the Prophet's mosque, in the prophetic mosque in Medina. Well, when the messenger came to the mosque and found them, talking together, talking with
sure,
each other,
sure.
and informed them that they had to come to the office, Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam informed Abdullah ibn Zubayr that according to a revelatory dream Imam al-Husayn had the night before, his expectation was that it must be the news of the death of Muawiyah, and it must be something regarding paying allegiance to the new caliph, Yazid. Well, Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam's answer was that he was certainly going to the office, but not at that moment, after a very short while.
Sure.
And before going there, Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam summoned around 20 young men of Bani Hashim, of the Hashimites, to accompany him.
Mm-hmm.
Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam instructed them just to wait outside the door,
that's
outside
right.
yes. the house.
Mm-hmm.
And Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam entered.
Mm-hmm.
When Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam entered the office, al-Walid bin Utbah informed Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam of the death of Muawiyah and said that it was, well, a new letter, a recent letter from Yazid that well, Imam al-Husayn salam had to pay allegiance to Yazid right away, without hesitation.
Mm-hmm.
Then Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam said, وَعَلَى الْإِسْلَامَ السَّلَامِ إِذْ بُلِيَتِ الْأُمَّ بِالرَّاعٍ مِثْلِ يَزِيدٍ. This is an end to the world of Islam. As soon as such a person like Yazid becomes the ruler of the Muslim empire, of
yes,
the Muslim
right,
world.
Because he's a corrupt tyrant.
He was a corrupt tyrant. Then Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam indicates some reasons in this regard.
Yes.
And mentioned مِثْلِ لَا يُبَايِعُ مِثْلَهِ. Imam
yes.
al-Husayn alayhi salam never said, I'm not going to pay allegiance to him. Imam al-Husayn salam said, such a person like me, such a person like
me,
wouldn't pay allegiance to such a person
like
Yazid.
Z.
And in this way, Imam al-Husayn salam never personalized this statement, but he generalized it.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
I mean, this point is very delicate. It must be understood that it wasn't a personal reaction of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam.
No.
It was a general reaction of a true Muslim leader regarding corruption and tyranny, and it showed a very clear response and clear answer how to behave how to treat a tyrant person.
Sure.
Okay. Well, Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam said that he wouldn't pay allegiance to Yazid at night time, and Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam indicated that such a person like me, as the leader of the Hashimites and the leader of the religious leader of the Muslim community, shouldn't do this at night time
right.
and in isolation. We need an open place.
Sure.
Yes.
I mean, the main thing is to hold on to that point, Dr. Fakhr. We're just going away for a short break, but we'll be right back. Please, viewers, stay with us. We'll be right back. Thanks. Welcome back, viewers. Thanks very much for staying with us. Dr. Fakhrani, you were at the point where Yazid has become the ruler of the Muslim world, and this individual is demanding allegiance straight away from Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And you've pointed out the fact that they're trying to do this hidden from the people, because you're talking about them coming in the night.
Yes.
To take this allegiance, and the threat is there over Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He's already facing a death sentence, that if he doesn't pay this allegiance, he's going to be immediately killed, or assassinated, if I can put it that way. The thing is that two things are important here in what you're saying. First of all, the treaty that Muawiyah was supposed to honor in terms of successorship, that has been negated, and it seems to me that this corrupt individual, Yazid, the son of Muawiyah, in Sham, is trying to find some legitimacy for his rule.
Yes.
And he can't get it from anybody.
Yes.
Because he's forced everybody else to pay allegiance, and we know that in terms of history, that they were bribed, cajoled, all the chieftains were out of fear even for the loss of their life, for the loss of their tribe, paid allegiance to Yazid. Because there was no other alternative. They weren't brave enough to stand in front. But there were one or two, even companions of the Holy Prophet, who absolutely refused to pay allegiance to Yazid. And that was important as well. And of course, we know they paid dearly for that. But at the end of the day, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, has got to take the imamate, the leadership, into context. that this person has to be opposed right from the beginning, and not for the sake of the fact that, you know, he's being threatened immediately, but as you said, that a person like me cannot make any allegiance with a person like him. So take it from there that, you know, because we are now getting to the stage where the Imam is now going to be forced to leave Medina to go to Kufa, but we know that there'll be circumstances in that as well, that why he actually proceeds to Kufa. But in between, of course, he is intercepted at Karbala. So lead us up to that point now, that, you know, what happens, you know, with the threat and the fact that the Imam is then being forced to leave Medina.
Yes. We find that, according to history, according to records, the proposal of paying allegiance to Yazid came to Imam al-Husayn al-Hassan on 25th Rajab. Okay, on 15th Rajab, Muawiyah died. On 25th Rajab, this courier reached Medina. On the same day, by evening, Imam al-Husayn al-Hassan was requested to come to the office of the governor of Medina. Imam al-Husayn al-Hassan needed some time as a respite, okay, to evaluate the whole situation. When Imam al-Husayn al-Salam was summoned to the office, another officer of the Umayyad dynasty in Medina was also present over there. When Imam al-Husayn al-Salam was leaving the office, that person told Al-Walid bin Utbah that if al-Husayn al-Salam, if Imam al-Husayn al-Salam left the office, they wouldn't be able to catch him.
They won't be able to bring him back again. Yes.
Okay. It would be absolutely impossible.
Yeah.
Imam al-Husayn al-Salam refused to pay allegiance, okay, at night time. He said, okay, such a person like me, if you need my allegiance, okay, it must be done openly.
Openly,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. Let's invite everybody here to a session, and openly we will discuss it.
Yes, in public.
We will discuss it. Okay. Imam al-Husayn al-Salam never said anything about paying allegiance.
That's right, okay. Yes.
We shall discuss it in the open, in front of the public.
Public, yes.
Well, the governor of Medina exerted all sorts of pressures on Imam al-Husayn al-Salam and tried to get allegiance by force. Imam al-Husayn al-Salam had no job, had no way except leaving Medina for Mecca. Why? Because of the Kaaba, Masjid al-Haram, is regarded as a safe and secure place. Okay, not for Muslims, but even for animals as well.
Sure.
Okay, not for human beings, but also for animals.
I see.
Imam al-Husayn al-Salam went to Mecca. In the evening of 28th Rajab, just 3 days after, receiving the, allegiance proposal, in the evening of 28th Rajab, Imam al-Husayn al-Salam left Medina. Mm-hmm. He arrived in Mecca on 3rd Sha'ban, on the anniversary of his birth.
I see.
It shows that this journey is a journey of revival. This journey is a journey of rebirth.
This is
an interpretation. Imam al-Husayn al-Islam rushed to Mecca.
Very
and
interesting.
Entered Mecca on 3rd Sha'ban.
Right.
And stayed over there for around 4 months and 7 or 8 days.
Right.
During the time Imam al-Husayn al-Islam was in Mecca, little by little, the people of Kufa, who learned about Imam al-Husayn's refusal, started sending letters to Imam al-Husayn al-Salam in Mecca.
Yes.
Because they know that Imam al-Husayn al-Salam was no longer in Medina, he was in Mecca.
Mecca.
Imam al-Husayn al-Salam, when Imam al-Husayn al-Salam was in Mecca, he received some delegations from the people of Kufa together with many, many letters.
Sure.
And the total number of the letters Imam al-Husayn al-Salam received amounted to 12,000 letters.
My goodness, right.
12,000 letters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when Imam al-Husayn al-Salam was in Mecca, he was approaching the time of Hajj.
Right.
At the same time, Yazid dispatched a band of terrorists to go there under one of the companions of Yazid to go to Mecca, and while pretending to
perform the Hajj rituals.
Yes.
They wanted to assassinate the Imam.
Imam al-Hussein. So Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam got the news and was informed by this conspiracy. So in order to not to violate the holiness of Mecca and to respect the honor, extraordinary honor and holiness of Mecca, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam had no way but to leave Mecca.
I see.
Some people, some historians may interpret it that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam left Mecca at the request of Kufans. No, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam left Mecca because he knew that if he was going to be assassinated over there in Mecca, the honor of Mecca would be violated.
Yes.
And since
forever,
forever. And since Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam had profound respect for Mecca and the holiness of this holy city, he had no job but to leave Mecca. But where to go? To go to Medina? To go back to Medina? Certainly not.
Not, yeah.
Imam al-Hussein al-Salam, on the basis of a large number of requests and letters he had received from the people of Mecca, quite naturally decided to go to
Kufa. Yeah.
Okay. And then Imam al-Hussein al-Salam started his journey from Mecca.
Now, this journey from, you know, many of our viewers are not aware of this because, of course, in today's modern context, you know, with airlines and flights, please put it into some kind of chronology that, you know, leaving Mecca and going to in the direction of Kufa.
Yes.
How long was this journey in for the Imam before he actually arrived at the month of Muharram in Karbala? Just put it in some kind of context that how long that journey was actually taking and what was involved in that.
Yes, the point is that when Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam left Mecca, it was 8th Dhul-Hijjah.
It was 8th Dhul-Hijjah, right. So it is in the month of the Hajj season, yeah.
On the 9th of Dhul-Hijjah, everybody is expected, I mean, those who want to perform Hajj, I mean, they are expected to be already in Mecca. So 8th of Dhul-Hijjah was the last time of entering Mecca. Vicinity of Mecca.
Yes.
Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, when he wanted to leave Mecca, he took a route by At-Tan'im. Tan'im is now, I mean, very much close to the vicinity of Mecca. But in those days, it was a bit away from the main part of Mecca.
Right.
Why At-Tan'im? Because At-Tan'im is one of the last places where Hajis are expected to wear the ihram, I mean, Hajj robe.
Aha, okay? Right.
So it was the right place for everybody to come into the, I mean, into Mecca. And Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam decided to take this place as his route to go out of Mecca, because at that place everybody was going to witness Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam as the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad to leave Mecca.
I see.
Okay. Well, according to the conditions of the time, this act of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam left its significant mark on the minds of everybody, that on the last time, on the last day of entering Mecca, why Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was leaving Mecca?
Ah.
Okay, it was a big question.
Of course, of course.
And this question meant nothing but an open rejection of the rule of Yazid.
Yes.
Okay? When Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was going out of Mecca, again the agents of Yazid went ahead and tried to prevent Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam from leaving Mecca. Because they wanted to keep Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam within the region of Mecca in order to assassinate him. But when Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam decided to go out of Mecca, they couldn't do anything.
Right.
Okay? They had no access to Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam.
Right.
Because the agents of Yazid had already entered the region of Mecca as pilgrims. So they were not entitled to leave Mecca. Okay.
So that Imam exposes them for what they were as well.
Yes,
then.
Yes, and it nullified the conspiracy.
It did.
Okay?
Yeah.
Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, when Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam reached At-Tan'im, the Tan'im station, at that place Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam noticed that a caravan from Yemen was going to Sham, to Damascus, in order to present some gifts obtained by force from the people of Yemen.
Ah.
Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam confiscated the properties of that caravan. the goods that they were going to take to Yazid.
Very interesting.
Why?
Right.
Because earlier Muawiyah refused to pay the large sum of money
he was expected to pay to
Imam
al-Husayn. 50,000 dirhams that he was supposed to pay.
And since it was a revolutionary movement, Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam was expected to show his political power on Yazid.
Mm.
Okay? He confiscated the properties, but suggested the Kamelias, they were free either to join Imam al-Husayn or to go back to
Yemen.
To Yemen. And Imam al-Husayn indicated that if any of them wanted to go to Yemen, Imam al-Husayn was going to pay the fare of going back to Yemen out of his own pocket. And this is a very human treatment of Imam al-Husayn to the Kamelias who were hired to escort the caravan. The
Very good.
You find that Imam al-Husayn al-Islam confiscated the properties that belonged to Yazid, but his treatment with the camellias was quite right
but
and quite human.
It has to be emphasized that this was Imam Hussein al-Islam's right in terms of, you know, the previous, as you see, in light of the previous treaty, and Yazid had no right to this at all.
Yes.
But the journey itself now between between Makkah and Kufa, how long was that in terms of? Was it about a month or 2 months? How long did it take?
It lasts less than a month.
Less than a month.
Less than a month.
Right,
yes.
Right. So now this is where the stage now becomes that the caravan proceeds. Now describe that for us, because now this is where Imam Hussein alayhi salam's kith and kin, his close relatives, his relations, and of course the women are all joining this caravan to go. Now, this was already prepared at Makkah, is that correct?
Yes,
yes.
Uh-huh. When Imam al-Husayn left Medina, well, he left Medina together with a large number of Hashimites.
Right.
And in Mecca also, some of his relatives later on, left Mecca for Medina in order to join him at Mecca. When Imam al-Husayn was leaving Mecca, again, they were together with him. Some people, on the way joined Imam al-Husayn al-Islam. However, as the caravan of Imam al-Husayn al-Islam was approaching in Karbala, little by little, in the course of lectures and sermons delivered by Imam al-Husayn al-Islam, we find that Imam al-Husayn al-Islam was, setting a ground for the ultimate fate of the same caravan, that it was a caravan of martyrdom. No one was expected, to reach a very high diplomatic post after that journey.
Sure.
Well, Imam al-Husayn al-Salam, when Imam al-Husayn, during his stay in Mecca, when Imam al-Husayn al-Salam received so many, at least 12,000 letters from the people of Kufa, in order to evaluate the political atmosphere of Mecca, of Kufa, Imam al-Husayn al-Salam had dispatched his cousin Muslim ibn Aqil to to go there to evaluate the whole situation.
Yes.
Because a political leader, first and foremost, he needs correct and true news and correct political
intelligence.
Yes, intelligence
what we say intelligence.
Yes.
But at the same time, it was also a way by sending his representative to Kufa in the personality of Hazrat Muslim bin Aqil, that it was also to test the loyalty of the Kufans, because of course Kufa was a city renowned for its loyalty with Imam Ali alayhi salam, with the Khilafat of Imam Ali. So therefore, this was very significant. He had to know whether this was going to be something genuine, or, as we later found out, or whether this was going to be something that was just superficial.
Yes.
Yeah.
At the same time, it must be indicated that the people of Kufa.
Right. Dr. Fakhrani, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we've only got a minute left. So, just if you could summarize just to this stage, that before the interception at Karbala, what stage we're at?
Yes, actually Imam al-Husayn al-Salam dispatched his cousin to Kufa, and when he was on the way from Mecca to Kufa, he received the tragic news of the martyrdom of Muslim.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Dr. Farah. I'm sorry to stop you there, but we've run out of time, but thank you for that. And viewers, will carry on with the story from at this point after he hears the news of the martyrdom of Hazrat Muslim bin Aqil, but we'll do that in an episode next week. So please tune in again. Thanks very much for watching today. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May the peace and mercy and blessings of Allah be upon you all. Thank you for watching and goodbye. Thank you. Thank you. Sorry about that. I'm just told.